This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
What did you think of the White Sox 44-man roster? Were there any major surprises? And was the news more about inclusion or exclusion? Is this a playoff roster?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was about inclusion. I was surprised a little bit that Andrew Vaughn made it. That was really good news. I thought that there was a good chance. But, I mean, you know, Andrew Vaughn is on that list. Luis Bisabi, we talked about, is on that list. Dane Dunning, Jimmy Lambert, Rodon. I mean, that if the idea that you could get something out of those guys is kind of exciting to me, and I was very pleased with it. You know, there are some guys on that list that are kind of 4A players, right? There are some guys on that list that you didn't really recognize as part of their 40-man list, so they added some guys from around other teams that they had brought in, and you thought they had made some decisions, but they hadn't. So I was very curious to see the list, and I think that I thought it was really interesting. But I think that, you know, seeing Andrew Vaughn on that list was kind of exciting to me. Makes me feel like he's a name that could stick, and that makes me pleased. You know, the catcher's interesting. I went through the whole thing. Looked up a bunch of stuff. I mean, I went crazy with it. It was really fun to see that list. It's fascinating to think about who could be on the 60-man roster, and they'll be adding names to that, and we'll find out who they are. But I all in all, would have to say that I was pretty pleased with the group.
Yeah, I think there are 30 teams that submitted their rosters and feel like in this truncated season they're playoff rosters, and I think the White Sox have good reason to believe theirs is. They have talent. They just have to realize it, and potential that they hope to get close to. I don't know if it was a surprise or not, but I think we had talked a lot about, and the White Sox sort of didn't discourage the idea necessarily that Garrett Crochet was going to be a guy that would be relied upon at some point this season. Perhaps by the end of it, Ricky Renteria entertained that idea and the question when we talked to him on Saturday. And he wasn't on the roster yet, but I think that they still have 16 spots they could add to. And I think when you hear him talk, Crochet, and on the White Sox podcast, I think with NBC Sports Chicago, I think he told Chuck Garfine he's ready, and he sounds ready, and who knows. But I think he's a guy who would be a fun inclusion at some point this season. Other than that, there weren't any big surprises. And it was a good reminder just how much pitching depth when you see the names stacked one after another. You know, are they going to go the 6-man or 7-man rotation? If Carlos Rodon is healthy and reliable, that gives you a lot of different options. And you wonder which starting pitcher will be the one, if they do tap one, to be kind of the swing guy and used in the bullpen and used in different roles. And how long will a quality start last? Are they going to go 5 innings with these guys? Are they going to not ask that much because they have some options? But, overall, no big surprises. And I think that the additions will be as interesting as what was submitted yesterday, because I think Garrett Crochet at some point in time might be part of that mix.
Yeah, probably not any huge shocks anywhere, but some things that definitely piqued my curiosity. Certainly seeing Andrew Vaughn on there was pretty exciting. He is one of the top prospects in the organization, and while it's hard to see a path for him this year, given the fact that he is a first baseman designated hitter, and he's got all of these other first baseman designated hitter types in the organization that are ahead of him on the depth chart, I think this was maybe just a move to get him a little bit of extra work with some big leaguers here as they start summer camp. So if there is any scenario where Andrew Vaughn is able to contribute this year, whether that be injury or players ahead of him not performing well, I think that there is a path for that. Now, I still want to see Nick Madrigal be the opening day second baseman, just like I would have wanted to see him be the opening day second baseman back in March when the season was supposed to begin. No disrespect to Leury Garcia or Danny Mendick, but I just want to see players drafted highly get their opportunity. No Jonathan Stever, I get it. You know, maybe he'll be added later. There's a lot of wiggle room with these rosters and opportunities for guys to be added and taken off the list if they need to do so. And then guys coming back from injury, like you guys mentioned, Jimmy Lambert, Dane Dunning, Carlos Rodon, of course, Kopech, who is certainly ready to go and should be somebody that everybody should have really high expectations for. It will be interesting to see how those players in particular who are coming off major surgery are utilized. You know, will they be kept on short leashes, pitch counts, innings limits? I'm sure all of that is being discussed. And of course, what Ricky Renteria brought up last week with the opportunity or maybe the chance to piggyback some of these guys. You know, you throw Kopech out there for 3, 4, 5 innings and maybe Rodon or Reynaldo Lopez or Cease or whomever comes in and pitches the last few innings of the game. You know, it's one of these things you're going to have to keep in mind. And I'm glad Renteria is thinking progressively like that and thinking outside the box, because every manager in Major League Baseball is going to have to think far outside the normal realm of possibilities here in this, yes, truncated season. And we should try to copyright that or get a trademark on that, David. We could be the official truncated show of the truncated season.
It would have to be a 3.5-hour show in theory, because it would be a truncated show.
I think we'd all be okay with that, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Well, the truncated season has potentially created quite the deep starting rotation for the White Sox, and that's immediately where my eyes went. I mean, you wouldn't have had Kopech until late July, Rodon until late July or August or something like that. And here we are with this late start in the truncated season. And you have a scenario where you could potentially have Rodon and Kopech available. And if they can be able to pitch without any limitations, you have a really deep rotation. Giolito, Keuchel, Cease, Lopez, Gonzalez, Rodon, Kopech. I mean, hell, you could do a 6-man rotation if you really wanted to, whatever. I mean, it is stacked. So that's the number one thing that stood out to me. It's cool that you see the names like the young guys like Madrigal, Vaughn, Dunning, and Lambert all make it. But I'm with Kevin. I'd love to see Madrigal break camp as the starting second baseman. And we have a little bit of a third catcher battle on our hands, so that'll be interesting to see if your man Mercedes can beat out Zach Collins or vice versa because of this third catcher weird rule that we have in our hands during a truncated season.
Well, Madrigal and Vaughn are the two names that jump off, and based on what the competition is, if Madrigal doesn't make it, it would be a pretty big disappointment, I think, for everybody, not just the hardest core White Sox fan. I think anybody paying attention to Chicago baseball, if he doesn't break camp at the very least, and I hope that means he's the starter, that would be a bad sign based on the competition. As far as Vaughn goes, that's interesting, but they've got, gosh, and we were talking about the pitching, and I get it. And in this season, like, all that pitching might make a lot of sense. You know, you only really might need a guy to go 2 or 3 innings at a time. So that staggered kind of 2 guys starting platoon, starting pitching type of thing might really work out to the Sox advantage. But they have also like so many possibilities, like the Cubs with the DH. But if Vaughn shows that he's good enough, then hell, put him in there. right? I mean, he's got nowhere else to go to work, to get real work. He can always hit in a batting cage. But those are the two guys that excite me the most. That's the funnest, biggest news, I think, to come off of waiting an extra, I don't know, 24, 12 hours for the Sox to finally announce their group of 44 players right now.
That was a great question, and I appreciate it.
Gordon Wittenmeyer reported Yu Darvish plans to report to the Cubs. John Heyman reported that Anthony Rizzo planned to report to the Cubs, who had two Tier 1 staffers test positive. Might have several players test positive as testing continues today. Do you think Darvish and Rizzo reporting will have any effect on the mindset of any Cubs player who's on the fence whether to play in 2020?
Well, you hope the best for the Tier 1 staffers who tested positive. When you hear the reports about Rizzo, you kind of forgot, because my mind was that, okay, he's in great shape, he's coming back, he's doing all that, shredding for a reason. So when John Heyman reminded us that he was in the high risk category as a cancer survivor and would be able to opt out with pay, I suppose it was reminding us that he did, you know, have a big decision to make, perhaps. But I think people expected Anthony Rizzo to be on board, and he, you know, he's the leader of this team. When the news came about Darvish, and Gordon Wittenmeyer around 1 o'clock, I think, tweeted out that a source close to Darvish said he was going to be, you know, reporting to the Cubs, I think there was a sigh of relief. And when you see that from a Cubs fan perspective, you might be excited more so, because that was the guy who you wondered about. And maybe, you know, if Rizzo is in the high-risk category, John Lester would fall into that category as well. But we have not heard anything but reports regarding that they're going to have a full complement of players and the roster. Everyone is going to be, you know, reporting. And as Heyman reports, no Cubs are known to be opting out. But Darvish was the big one. So if you're looking at that and you see Darvish and you see Rizzo and you see your whole team expecting, hopefully, to be healthy and intact, if the season gets off to the start that we expect it to on July 23rd and 24th, Cubs, you know, can feel pretty good about, like a lot of teams, as we said, feel pretty good about their ability to contend, because they have veterans, they have experience, and those were the two guys, or at least Darvish was at the top of the list of curiosities. So him coming to town, I thought, was a big deal.
I think it's interesting that that players are reporting and that there are some players that aren't reporting. I really hope that you make your decision based on your own circumstance, based on the people around you, based on your own medical history, and not kind of a follow the leader thing. Well, if Anthony Rizzo's going to do it, then you're shamed into doing it. I think it's an individual decision that you need to be able to make of your own accord, and I think you can take all that into consideration if you want, that the medical stuff seems to be at a point where a guy like Rizzo isn't afraid. As you say, he did get himself shredded, and it looked like he was coming back for some reason, so it wasn't necessarily news. I wasn't shocked to hear it. And, you know, John Lester talked about coming back as well when he was interviewed on The Score, talked about, you know, just give him a date and he'll get his arm ready and up and running. So he seemed pretty gung-ho about it as well. I do think it's a personal decision. I do think that you have to weigh your own health, your own situation, the people around you into that decision, as opposed to saying, well, if you Darvish can do it, I can do it too. So I'm glad that Darvish is reporting. I think he was the one guy that you thought might, given his career earnings and all the rest, he might not be all in on it. Always felt like Rizzo was all in, and ditto Lester, so it doesn't really surprise me. And I suppose if somebody is on the fence, maybe they think, well, everyone's going to do it and there's nothing to worry about guys with more serious conditions. But again, very personal decision.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, we're all going to be watching this season with bated breath, I guess, and the fact that players will test positive, it's inevitable that it will happen, and you just hope that, you know, everybody will end up all right at the end of this thing. And there are players who are more at risk than others, in particular, like we've talked about here, John Lester and Tony Rizzo, but it's 100% on them to make their decisions for themselves, for their family. And I don't think anybody has the place, really, or a stand to tell anybody else what to do in terms of their own career and, you know, the decision that they want to make. So whatever that they do decide to do, you know, I know a lot of players have already opted out. David, you brought up Ian Desmond and his post on Instagram, which was fantastic. I read that yesterday. Guys like Mike Leake, Ryan Zimmerman, Joe Russell. Players are already opting out. You may see players on the Cubs or White Sox opt out as well as we get closer to this thing starting to rev up. And I think, you know, all we can do, like I said, is just respect everybody's decision. If a player chooses not to play, then you have to accept that as well. And I hope there's no, you know, pushback or disdain thrown toward the way of any of these players that do decide not to play, because it is their own decision to make.
I think the influence of guys like Darvish and Rizzo, I mean, particularly Darvish, who had been outspoken about being hesitant to play and now deciding to play, it's inevitable when you see the stars of your team step up and say, you know what, I'm going to do this. And add John Lester to that mix as a cancer survivor and being someone who is high risk for coronavirus. But I just hope that everyone is taking the time to make their own decision. As you said, Molly, that personal decision is very important. Don't get caught up in the moment. I know it's exciting to have the return of baseball and to try and push in a shortened season to maybe get to the playoffs. But everybody has to make their own decision based on their own circumstances and their families and their situations. And I hope everybody sticks to doing that.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think it is a personal choice, and I understand when you hear the reasons why certain players are deciding to sit this one out. I've not heard one that doesn't make a ton of sense. I was like, I thought Yu Darvish might sit. I really did. Now, ask me in 8 weeks if I wish he would have sat instead of showing back up, right? I mean, that's always going to be there just because that's what we do. The Rockies' Ian Desmond, while what I thought he put out on the gram was very powerful, unfortunately, as powerful as that is right now, tomorrow, the page will turn, the news will turn. I think if he plays this year and he's there every day and available to the media and however that's going to be, he would have a bigger platform to put out what is a very strong and good message. So I don't know that sitting out for that reason is ideal. But I'm glad, obviously, as a Cubs fan, I'm glad to see that the stars are going to be there.
It's a great question, and so many of them were so good. In fact, all of them I learned something from, that if I mention one of them, I'm going to leave out all of them. And if I try to mention all of them, I won't remember some, and I'll regret that.
Did the Bears make an error? Not signing or even pursuing Cam Newton, who will have the better season, Newton or Nick Foles, and which of the two is more likely to be injured?
Well, I don't know if it's an error, but I do think that Nick Foles will have a better, won't have a better season than Cam Newton. I think Cam Newton's headed to a really big year. I think Cam Newton is headed to a really good team, and I think we went over this ground a little bit. The problem with the Bears and Cam Newton is they were never going to get Cam Newton on the cheap. They probably, if they really were interested in him, probably would have had a trade for him. They probably would have had to pay a fortune for him. They'd have found a way to. They're not the New England Patriots, okay? So it would be difficult for the Bears to have secured Cam Newton without having to pay an exorbitant fee, and they were not in a position to wait on him. I think that Cam Newton's going to have a good year. I think a one-year deal for a guy, again, you think about health, provided health. You think the same thing with Nick Foles. He's got to remain upright for him to have any kind of a season. I think Cam Newton's a better player than Nick Foles, and I think, therefore, he will have a better season. I think he's also playing in a better organization with a better coach. So I think those things matter, and that's why I would pick him to have a better season. The health thing is roll the bones. I can't tell you which is more likely to be upright, because Cam Newton, you know, the way that he plays will put himself in a precarious position. I'm not sure that he'll be playing that way in New England. They seem to have a different kind of style and a different way of getting things done. So I'll say Nick Foles, probably more likely to be injured of the two, because Nick Foles has got some ailment every year, and Newton has just been trying to come back from injury. So I really have a lot of faith in Cam in New England. I think it's going to work out.
One guy was a Super Bowl MVP. The other guy was a league MVP. I think that when you compare healthy quarterbacks, Cam Newton to Nick Foles, it's an easy choice. I mean, Cam Newton is the more skilled, dangerous, explosive player. I don't think that's ever been a question. Did the Bears make an error by not signing or pursuing him? We'll find out, depending on how healthy Cam Newton can stay. But the one thing about this whole discussion, which I think has we've all made the same assumption throughout this, and that is that, okay, number one, I'm not 100% certain that the Bears didn't try to at least investigate or explore the possibility of Cam Newton coming to Chicago and what it would take and how healthy he was. They may have done that, and we're not aware of that because it hasn't been reported yet, but I'm not 100% sure that they didn't. The other thing that I think is a bigger assumption and maybe mistake to make is, what in the world gives anybody the idea that Cam Newton would be interested in the Bears? Why in the world would a guy who does, in his mind, he's highly motivated, he's highly skilled, he's got something to play for, why would he look at an offense that is that broken and come and think that he could fix it or want to be part of that process? Because there aren't as many weapons. I know the Patriots, you say, they don't have weapons either, but they do have a tradition. They do have Bill Belichick. They do have Josh McDaniels. They have more reasons to believe that that would be a nice soft landing rather than Chicago. So I'm not sure about that either. Who has a better season? Well, if they both stay on the field, I think that you can presume that Cam Newton's going to have a better season. But I think that's a big if, you know, because I don't know if he is a guy. I don't know what condition he is in health wise. I don't know what those X-rays or MRIs show, and I don't know if the way that he plays won't expose him to an injury more so than Nick Foles, who is more of a timing guy in a system that's not going to ask him to do as much. And we know Cam Newton likes to get on the move, go downfield, run downfield. So I think if he probably is more likely to be injured of the two just based on how he plays. But if both stay on the field and healthy, he is going to have a better year.
I don't know if I'd necessarily say that the Bears made an error by not signing Cam Newton, because I think there's so much up in the air regarding him and what kind of player he is now. You know, we've talked about this for a while, ever since Cam Newton was going on Instagram and posting his workouts and you know, shirtless pictures and letting everybody know how ripped and in what good of shape he's in. And that was going on for months when he was looking for a gig. And I said this even back then. You know, he's had the shoulder, he's had the foot, he's had concussions, he's had every injury under the sun, really, for a guy who's just about, what, 30, 31 years old. That is a lot of wear and tear on a guy, and I don't know if Cam Newton is ever going to be able to get back to where he was several years ago when he was the MVP of the league. So I don't know if I'd necessarily say that the Bears made an error on passing up on him. As far as Nick Foles goes, you know, his injury record is pretty well documented as well. I mean, you know, he just started four games last year for the Jags, five the year before that for Philly, seven the year before that, three the year before that for Kansas City. And I know he was a backup for a lot of that time as well, but he has been hurt nearly every single year he's been in the league. I would anticipate Nick Foles missing more time than Cam Newton this upcoming season. And as far as Cam coming to the Bears, you guys are spot on about that. Why would you want to come here when you can play for Bill Belichick, the guy that wins everything all the time?
I don't think we could say yet if the Bears made an error by not signing Cam Newton, because we have to see if he's healthy, A, and B, if he is still up to the caliber of player he was before it getting injured. You know, if he can rise to the standard of that MVP year or something very close to it or not, or if he's just going to be a lesser player now who's a little bit older. We have to see all of that, and once we see all of that, we'll know if the Bears made an error. Who'll have a better season, Newton or Nick Foles? Again, if Cam Newton is healthy, it'll be Cam Newton. it definitely will. But if he's got some injuries going, or if he just doesn't look like the same player, then it'll be Nick Foles. But if I had to guess, it would be Newton. Who's more likely to be injured? I agree with you, David. The mobility factor. Cam Newton is more mobile. Therefore, you would think he's more prone to injury. But then you look at the Bears. If Nick Foles does win the job, is the offensive line going to be able to keep Nick Foles intact and in one piece? Is Juan Castillo really going to be able to fix this O-line? That's another question that we're going to have to see. But I'll tell you, the Bearsiest Bears scenario that could happen is Nick Foles wins the job for the Bears, and after four games, he's benched. Mitch Trubisky takes over and fails miserably. Meanwhile, in New England, Cam Newton looks healthy and thrives. That is the Bearsiest Bears scenario we could potentially see.
Get your tickets now.
And Ray, you're right about that. That's why I'm going to say this. I want steak and shrimp. I want cake and ice cream. I want a combo. I want a beef and sausage dipped with hot peppers. But why couldn't we have had both as Bears fans and as an organization? Why couldn't we have had Nick Foles and Cam Newton? Why did it only have to be one? Why couldn't it have been both? And would this conversation be the same? Let's just say the Bears had traded a fourth-round pick to the Carolina Panthers for Cam Newton and paid him X. If Nick Foles was then picked up on a basic one-year deal worth basically only $1 million, all that other money is all incentive-based. He's there for $1 million, one-year deal. Would we be having the same conversation? Could we flip the players? Because when Bill Belichick and the Patriots grab somebody, especially a quarterback, and we as Bears fans, supposedly according to the Four Letter Network, have had the worst group of quarterbacks, worse than the Bengals and the Browns and the Jaguars in the Super Bowl era, okay, would we have said, ooh, well, if Bill Belichick really wanted Nick Foles, then shame on Ryan Pace and the Bears for getting Cam Newton. Would you have the same conversation if the script was flipped? I wonder. It's very interesting. I want both. I wish we had Cam and Nick, and Mitch was maybe on the Patriots this year instead.
That's a question that George McCaskey and Ted Phillips would probably have to answer.
The Bears have given season ticket holders the opportunity to refund 2020 tickets without losing their seats for 2021. In the same letter, they express hope the fans will be allowed this season for games. If you were a season ticket holder, how would you respond? Hold on to the seats with the hopes of going to Soldier Field this year, or take the full refund and say see ya in 2021?
Yeah, I would probably say see ya in 2021. I would get my money back. I would probably look at the landscape and wonder exactly what I would be walking into in a crowded Soldier Field. How crowded are we talking about? 20,000 people, 15,000 people? That's anything over four, I think I would make me a little bit skittish at this point in time. I don't know what the environment's going to be in September in Chicago, and I think that you could look at it optimistically and hold on to those seats and hope that you get the experience. But I think that if you are an NFL fan, you are going to, hopefully, a best-case scenario, want to get very comfortable on your couch with your big screen TV and your whatever you want to, chili or nachos or whatever you want to serve, and get comfortable, watch the games on TV, listen to them on WBBM, you know, sync up your radio with your TV set, as they say, listen to Jeff and Tom and Mark Grody, because I don't know that I would want to necessarily go to Soldier Field. So I would say, give me my money back, keep me on the list, and I'll see you next year.
Well, if I had season tickets, presumably I would have some money, so I wouldn't need the money if I had seasons. I'd be all over it. I would love to go. I think what would happen is they'd announce that they're expecting 1 million, and then 6,200 people would show up, so that would be plenty of room in Soldier Field. I would, again, make sure that I did not need to use the facilities. I would probably either drive a flatbed truck with a porta potty on it. I've seen that at some college tailgates, or I would have a camper or something just to make sure that I had done all my business before I went into the game. I wouldn't want to be standing near my close friends, but I'd be all over going. I think it'd be fun to go, especially if it was a limited group. I watch a lot of these games, and And I think, man, the stadiums are empty. Surely we could fit a family of five up in the corner.
Nobody's ever heard of numbers like this.
No one. No one's ever heard of those kind of numbers. So I'd be all over trying to go to a Bear game on a regular basis if I were a season ticket holder. When I was a significantly younger man, I did not have seasons in my name. This is long before I ever covered the Bears. But I did buy a guy's season tickets, and I did go to the 8 to 10 games a year. Sometimes I would not buy the preseason ones unless I had to, but it was awesome. I had a couple of seats that were near the end zone, and it was just awesome to go and bring a little cardboard when it started getting really cold so that it didn't get through your feet. You learned all the tricks of the trade. Always enjoyed going to football games, and the idea of being able to go would outweigh, again, the presumption here is that you don't need the money. If I needed the money, see ya, and I'll see you in 2021. But I think that in this scenario, I have the money for seasons. I'm not losing anything, so I may as well go.
You know, it's kind of torn on this one. You know, as you guys kind of alluded to there, the television experience or the radio experience of a football game is far superior generally than actually being there. I don't know that I would go this year, you know, it's not so much of, you know, a fear of the coronavirus or anything like that, because I've said before, I generally feel comfortable if I'm outdoors for whatever reason. I don't know that there's any scientific evidence to back that up, but I feel all right if I'm outside. I just don't know if you know, hauling down to Soldier Field and going through the whole ordeal. It's more the presentation, you know, being at the football game really isn't as good as watching it or listening to it. So I think for that reason, I might just sit chilly for this year and punt it to 2021 if I had season tickets.
If I'm a season ticket holder, I'm saying, give me my money back. I will see you in 2021. And I may consider a single game ticket or two, but first of all, I'd have to see what happens at these games and hear about how fans are acting, because my guess is that when these folks out here get a lot of drinks in them, all of the social distancing and the masks are forgotten about, bro. So I doubt that I would want to go.
Forgotten about, bro. I love it. Now, I think everybody's made really good points, and we've had both sides of the equation here. And to Mully's point, you know, most people that have season tickets are in pretty good shape, so it's not the money factor. But that might be why I might sit this one out. And I mean, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, that season ticket list is still long and hard to get on. During my 2.5 years out of sports talk radio, when I was working with another guy who wore sunglasses and believed in conspiracy theories, I had Chet Kopick's season tickets. My dad and I went to all the games, and it was a fantastic time. But one of the best parts of it were the tailgate, and you were around a lot of people, and we met up with the same people all the time for all these games, and watch pregame shows and listen to BBM and listen to the score and drank and ate two meals and then drank some more as we walked into the state. That was all a big part of it, and telling stories and laughing and playing bago and blah, 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 blah. That's just not, you can't do that this year. Not if you're smart, you just can't be a part of that. So that's part of the experience to me of being a season ticket holder and hanging out in the parking lot before and after the game.
Bago?
So me personally, you know, cornhole bags.
I knew what you meant, yeah. But I've never heard it called bago before. That's just okay. I don't mind it.
All right, you know, throwing bags in the parking lot with a Bud Light in one hand and a bag in
bag-o.
The other.
A butto and a bago.
Butto and a bago.
Yeah, mm-hmm, right. And forgetting to put my mask on, bro, because I've had too many Bud Lights.
Come on, bro.
You know, this is an awkward question, Casey.
ESPN NBA front office insider Bobby Marks reported that Chris Dunn's qualifying offer has grown from $4.6 million to $7.1 due to prorated bookkeeping and the coronavirus stoppage. Is that fair? What does it mean for Dunn's future in Chicago? And would you keep him if you were making the call?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's fair. I think part of the problem is the assumption that Dunn was going to continue to start. Now, he was injured at the time of the stoppage, and I would imagine that the Bulls had a pretty good sense as to how many games they could start him and still get away with not paying the $7.1 million. They could still get away with that $4.6 million option. So that you take that out of the equation when you're doing a proration of that. I don't think it's fair that the Bulls would do that to the guy, but I am confident that they would do that to the guy because they were going nowhere, and while he was helping them, you know, the same issues are still there. I like Chris Dunn. He found a role. He accepted what the situation was, and he broke his rear end and made himself this really good, dynamic defensive stalwart. That's not enough in the NBA. You got to be able to hit the three-point shot. I think I might have kept him for $4.6 million, but I don't think he's worth $7.1 million. And I think you need to save some money, and I think it's his future in Chicago is affected by this bookkeeping decision. If I'm making the call, I would say goodbye to Chris Dunn, and I do regret that is the case because I don't think he's a bad person in any way. I like him. I really do. I love the way he accepted what was happening and still worked hard. I think those are great qualities. It's just he's not a good enough basketball player, and I'm sorry, $7.1 million it needs to be spent elsewhere.
Bulls have decisions to make, unrestricted free agents like Chris Dunn, Denzel Valentine, Shaq Harrison. When it comes to Dunn, I think that his limitations are that he can't shoot, and that's a problem in the NBA. That said, he's a pretty good teammate. He's a very strong defensive player. He can run your offense, and we're entering what is going to be a transitional year. I know the Bulls can still make the playoffs in a transitional year, but I think that even though it's more than you might ideally budget for a guy as limited offensively as Chris Dunn has been, and he can't finish, and a lot of things that you said are exactly valid criticisms, but I probably would keep him. I would not sign him long-term. I would not try to talk extension. I would make him prove it again and prove that he belongs if he wants to be part of this core. Right now, he has played himself out of that core, but the core is still very promising. So I would probably pony up, and I would pay $7 million to keep a guy who, if healthy, can be part of your defensive identity because of with all of these other things that you have on your team, and you have an explosive offensive weaponry, if you will, you still need to play some D, and Chris Dunn lets you play some D.
I like Chris Dunn a lot, too, and I would like to have him on the Bulls because of, you know, all the things that you guys said, but for $7.1 million, I mean, the Bulls have so many other needs and holes that they need to address. I feel like this would be, you know, Chris Dunn for $7 million would be more of a luxury signing, and the Bulls right now cannot afford that luxury whatsoever. They need to use this money to get better players and not just defensive specialists because they have far more pressing issues right now than their perimeter defense. I unfortunately would have to pass on this for Chris Dunn.
Yeah, I agree with Kevin here. Financial flexibility is what you need, and I mean, paying Chris Dunn 7.1 is not going to really give you that. I say cut ties.
It's 6:02. I'm simply going to say no shot.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.